My guest this week is perhaps best known for his contribution to the slightly niche sport of skiing while eating bananas and singing Norwegian folk songs. He is also extremely well known for his cover versions of both the Norwegian and Finnish telephone directories set to drum and bass music. But perhaps best of all, his contribution to the literature surrounding what to do when stuck outside with only brown cheese and a bear claw. Please welcome my guest, Knut Melvær.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Tell us a little bit about your latest book.
Oh, it's just a little thing that I wrote while I was bored. It's about the perfection of the Norwegian mountainside and how you can combine that with the spiritual experience of, hiking with a tent in your bag.
Would you describe yourself as camp?
Yes, very much indeed.
Let's talk about your first choice of music.
Oh, I cannot go a day without the Beethoven, as you know, and particularly the sextet for two horns and a string quartet in E flat major, Opus 81 B. It's essential for me to get through the day.
What is it that you take from that?
It goes very well with Old Danish.
The pastries or the language?
The spiritus.
Gesundheit. Hi. Do you think we've stretched this one long enough?
I think, and this is not criticism, but it is. Every time when people say that this is not criticism, it is.
It is. Feed me the shit sandwich already. What do you got?
You have to do some more work on your Kirsty Young impression.
To be fair, I had like 30 seconds notice or whatever, so I've not listened to her very much at all.
But you are a native speaker.
Yeah, but like Scotland's a diverse place. You think you've got diverse accent in Norway? We have some. That was a very generic accent you got from me.
If we should place Kirsty Young in the Scottish diverse landscape.
Don't ask me that. I've lost my ear for it. Hmm. See, I knew what I should have done is look her up and validate my hypotheses. I'm just trying to think about what she sounds like. I would have put her in the Central Belt somewhere, but it's possible Edinburgh?
Let's go with that.
Sure. Now I look like an idiot on internet radio.
And since we are former academics, as everyone knows now, we should provide some context to this bit, perhaps. And it is actually my pick of the week.
Desert Island Discs?
Yeah. The radio program and now podcast.
Yes. How did you find out about it?
I don't remember.
Was it a long time ago?
A couple of years, perhaps. I think I picked it up on another podcast, probably.
It's just podcasts all the way down.
Yeah. Podcasts are eating the world.
So why are we desert island discing this week?
Because metaphorically, we are going to be cast away on a desert island that is a place without work.
I don't understand. I feel sure that there's just more work.
There's always work. But before we dive into the whole thing, just to finish the desert island disc thing.
Mm.
It's probably one of my favorite programs, and it is this interview-based show that where the premise is that the interviewee is going to allegedly be thrown out to a desert island. And what kind of music picks choices would the person have, sort of the essentials? And
what?
Yeah.
What do you like about it? What is it that speaks to you about it?
It is partly that the personalities, the persons are mostly new to me and mostly interesting. But also, it is interesting how they have managed to construct, because it goes through their biography, right? They go through the life thing, and they of course manage to tie the music choices to the different stages or personality traits and so on. And it's just an interesting frame, and also interesting when people. On the tin, you have sort of an prejudice of what they are going to like, and then they mostly surprise you.
In which direction? That people are more classically inclined, or that people are actually hipper than they look?
Both.
Or both?
Both.
Okay.
Yeah.
Example?
Not on at the top of my head, but...
Okay.
Or in, or on...
Off the top of your head.
Yeah, off. So the examples in the top of my head doesn't come
from
off.
The top of your head.
Prepositions.
Out of the top of your head. Yeah, I know. Right. This is what I'm saying.
And but also Kirsty Young is a great interviewer.
Yeah, from the little I've heard her, I think she's pretty good. She also has like an amazing voice, which I have butchered today. Sorry, Kirsty.
And she doesn't shy away from either the controversial or personal stuff. But it seems that it is expected in this program, so most people seems to be okay with it. So yeah.
Hmm.
I guess there are some prep work, but yeah.
Out of interest, I'm sure you've given this some thought before, if not today, but like, what would your desert island discs be? Briefly, or some of them. Since we're here. And yes, you have to limit it.
The Beethoven track was actually pretty good, even though I just found it on the internet, but...
You wouldn't take the Ninth Symphony? I know it's a cliche, but like it's great.
Nah, it's went commercial.
Oh, he's sold out. The guy's deaf and he's writing one of the best symphonies ever, and you're like. You're harshing his buzz because you think he sold out, honestly.
How could he? Yeah, especially because he's deaf and couldn't write that stuff. That means that he could do it, like, blindfolded.
I'm pretty sure there's something wrong with that. Yeah.
Did Helen Keller ever write music? but... I guess I have to put Radiohead in there.
I figured you probably would. Which album?
All of them.
Not allowed.
No, I know. should I switch the complete works of Shakespeare with the complete works of Radiohead?
I'd allow that. I don't know whether Kirsty would allow it. She's very strict.
But the luxury would be an iPod. 1,000 songs in your pocket.
1,000? Oh.
But I haven't really given it any thoughts, really.
How can you have been listening to that podcast for 2 years and not have had this thought?
That's perhaps a... But yeah, I think... It's crazy hard. Because you want something that you don't get tired of. You want something that can be listened to in different ways, I guess. Probably also something with Tool. Because there's so much to discover there.
Okay, I'm not really familiar.
Layers. It's really technical music. So they have songs that where they have incorporated like the Fibonacci sequence and all that jazz. So yeah.
It's math rock?
It isn't really. It's not like the Dillinger escape plan, if I remember it correctly, but... but yeah. So, perhaps Radiohead, I would perhaps say Hail to the Thief, actually.
Album.
And Tool, that would be most probably Anima. And I guess I also... I would bring a Dylan plate, not because I particularly listens to Dylan a lot, but I perhaps should. And since he won the
he literally won the Nobel Prize. Uh huh.
literature. I guess there are stuff to be studied there. Interpreted in many ways for many years.
If he's lasted this long, right? Then probably there's something there to get into. So why are we talking about Desert Island Discs?
I think it has a kind of a summer holiday feel to it.
Yes.
Yeah. And the fact that on a desert island you are cast away. You are away from stuff.
You are away from stuff. You're not doing a very good job of being away from stuff, I have to say.
I'm doing a...
You want to eat the shit sandwich. Like, get the fuck off Slack.
This is field work for me. But
oh, really?
Yeah. Really? Not really.
How's that?
Because earlier this year, there were this piece about how things like Slack sort of has transformed the workplace from a place of work to a sort of all-encompassing, life-intruding thing.
Mm-hmm.
And being sort of the Slack janitor.
Janitor is a much better word. It's like a jail... It's like a prison guard and a janitor at the same time. I'm going to guess you mop a lot of floors.
Yeah, but since being whatever, somewhat responsible for something in our Slack team...
Everything, literally everything.
I had to give it some thought. And
okay.
My bias is that I love the thing. I love Slack, but also what happens in the Slack, especially our Slack, right?
It's pretty great.
It is. And so I was prone to be a bit critical or sort of dismiss the piece. But... I'm starting to see the points.
What do you think the point is?
It's several things, but the fact that you have a hotline to your work environment 24/7, even though they try to make good defaults and snooze and mutes and so on. But if you happen to like or appreciate the people on the other side of the sort of Slack interface, it's really hard to let loose.
Well, it's like having Twitter, right? Like, yeah. I don't stop looking at Twitter when I go home. In fact, I probably start looking at Twitter when I go home. Because I like and appreciate the people who are there and, you know, you want to chat with them, right? And it's the same with this.
Yeah, and in fact, for me, Slack has taken over. I Twitter much less now, both in
meeting
and doing stuff there.
Actually, yeah, I agree. One of the things that I thought about was that I did spend a lot of time on Twitter nerding out, like, for my job. And actually, it's more productive to nerd out for my job in Slack because the people that I work with get the benefit or get fed up with me, depending on how you interpret that. But, like, there's lots of kind of fog nerding stuff to talk about, right?
Yeah. So there's the advantages. And it's all not strictly work, right? It's also general interests or... sort of work-related but not work stuff.
I think we probably also have to acknowledge that there's a sizable chunk of people just dicking around, which is really funny.
Yeah.
It's a nice combination.
It's nice when not the whole, many in the company go on a meme tantrum or something.
Yeah. I so wish we shouldn't, but I so wish we could share the last like genuine meme because it was phenomenal.
But would it?
Hi, Will.
Yeah. The greatest thing, Emoji World.
Yes, we now have a channel that's only communicating in emojis with mixed degree of success. Mostly, it's turning into charades, right?
Yeah.
Which film is this?
And you have to answer in emojis as well.
Yeah. You can tell people their guess is wrong with emoji reactions. It's brilliant. We do also work sometimes.
So if Heptapod makes you see through time, what does emoji whatever do?
Please tell me it doesn't turn reality into the emoji movie, which I have not seen but do not wish to see either.
I saw the trailer. It actually doesn't look that bad.
What? It looks shit!
But I like camp, so...
We covered that already.
So there are many great things, but one allegedly should also care about other stuff than work.
Sure, theoretically.
Yeah.
How's that going?
Poorly. Or, well, I have also managed to paint a lot of the basement and clean it up and so on.
Oh, since you bring this up, it was on my list of things to talk about this week, so let's talk about the fact that Norwegians are apparently compelled to, like, paint their own houses every summer or something.
Yeah, but did we have a conclusion on the whole thing?
On the whole taking a break, like, from Slack? Yeah. You tell me. What have you learned?
I don't think we have. And we haven't touched your side of the story.
But I'm still at work.
Yeah, but generally.
I think I basically agree with and probably subscribe to absolutely everything that you just said. Including, I should probably be on it less, but it's quite compelling. And to be honest, like, it's not like Slack is not like just working 4 extra hours a day or whatever, because it's not that. It's conversation and it's moving forward and understanding stuff better and nerding out with people who kind of understand why you're nerding out about the thing you're nerding out about. Wow, that was a sentence.
Yeah, what I find probably most difficult is that... I guess as a workplace, you want... It's good for the workplace. It's good for the company that we do the stuff. But it shouldn't be an expectation.
No, it should be opt-in. I mean, like, social media is opt-in, right? If you're not into Twitter or you don't get it or it doesn't do anything for you, don't be on Twitter. That's cool.
And I guess for the people who... don't have a high tolerance for the kind of noise that can be in things like Slack, or have a more stricter sense of being on work and off work and have other obligations and so on, they can perhaps feel that they are missing out or striving to catch up with all the stuff that has happened between 4 p.m. and 8 a.m.
Right. I saw you say, and I thought it was good that you said, that one shouldn't think about Slack as email, like you don't have to go through and catch up on everything. If something is important, someone will tell you.
Yeah, and it is a bit that's fine for Knut thing. But it is a good thought technology to think of Slack as a stream, like Twitter, and not as an inbox, right? But
oh, definitely.
Then again, you know that people are talking about interesting and or important and or stuff that will have some consequence for you.
Yeah. I do admit to occasional crushing FOMO when I've been like in a workshop or something for half a day and then you come out and there's like a million Slack things and you're like, oh, hell, I missed this really interesting conversation that I really wanted to contribute to.
So you also have to, I guess, make it culture that it is okay to have the same kind of conversation multiple times. Or mention the same thing again, and so on. Or just perhaps ask the questions, and so on.
So what are you going to do in your experiment to try the B condition in your A-B test if the A condition is Slack on while you're on holiday?
So tomorrow I'm going to Jotunheimen, to the mountains.
That sounds very mythological.
It is.
Are you going to see like gods and stuff?
Yeah, sure.
Or trolls?
Of course.
Or both?
But more importantly, I'm going to turn Slack off.
How long do you think you can keep it turned off?
I will be back on Monday, and I will try to continue to have it turned off.
Rad.
And keep doing that, having it turned off to August, when I'm back at work.
Whoa. Is it wrong that the first thought in my head is, how are we going to coordinate the next episode if there's no Slack? We could use SMS like animals.
Or I can send you a postcard.
Oh yeah, something. Cool. Could you send me a telegram?
I guess because...
Might get there slightly faster.
We have... I guess next week we either have to do the one or do two before, because the week after... I'm going to be first spending some time at friends and then probably going on a sailboat to Shetland.
Oh, so cool. Yeah, I'm probably away the same week, so we got to figure something out.
Yeah.
Good for you, so, trying to turn it off.
We will see. All bets can be placed on Betson.
We do not encourage betting or gambling in any way.
May the odds be in someone's favor.
Usually the bookmakers, I think.
So, yeah.
Okay, I need to hear more about the boat. That can happen now or at some future point, but sailing to Shetland is a big deal.
Yeah, well, many people have done it before.
Oh, sure. I'm not saying you're the first. I'm just, it's pretty
like
cool.
You're going out on a thieving mission or something. They're going to act decently.
But if you happen to bring back any gold or whatever, then par for the course, right?
But my dad, my brothers, and my I guess soon to be brother-in-law are planning to go to Shetland by sail if the winds let us. And that's pretty much it.
That's cool, though. Is this like a stag do? Is this like a kind of brother is getting married or brother-in-law is getting married thing? It's just...
Well, he hasn't proposed yet. But we know that that's going to happen, so... Yeah. I guess it depends on how he behaves on this trip.
Like, is there kind of a minimum statutory amount of gold that he needs to come back with before it's kind of, like, legit?
Yeah, he has to
do
something.
I mean, expectations have been set in history, is what I'm saying.
He has to do some serious pillaging.
Right. Are there any monasteries in Shetland? I didn't think so.
Well, we can manage without...
I'm a bit jealous that you get to go to Shetland before I do. I've wanted to go there for a long time.
Yeah, yeah, I can see that. That's why we are going. Actually, it was just, I got the idea a bit on a whim. Let's do that. Okay. And my boys have connections with people with boats or ships.
The Shetland, is this like some Shetland mafia or some Viking mafia that kind of, when you say they have connections, that sounds like a euphemism.
It's more like a boat mafia.
Norwegian boat mafia. I'm pretty sure that's a band.
So it will probably be more exciting to tell about after we have actually done the trip.
Okay, we can come back to that. Just edit this whole bit out, it'll be fine.
So yeah, what are the things you have planned for this summer holiday?
Two sets of visitors in fairly short succession, and then not sure. I find it interesting, though, I was thinking about this, how many people are actually spending their summer in Norway. So of our colleagues that I've spoken to, many, many, many are travelling around Norway to visit friends and family. Some will go to Sweden, which is just next door. A lot of people will spend their holidays in the country. And I don't know, I was trying to think about the UK, and I was thinking that maybe more people would leave the UK than with summer in the UK. But also, we're talking about a much longer stretch of time, right? Like, for some context, I have 3 weeks off. Like, I pretty much have to take 3 weeks off in July because no one else is in the office and I'm not going to do much useful work on my own. And everyone else is the same, really. Most people are taking at least 3 weeks off, sort of July or maybe early August. And the last time I had a 3 week summer holiday was because I was getting married. Like, it's very rare for people to have 3 weeks off in the UK in the summer without, you know, like they're doing a huge trip or they're getting married and going away, or it's unusual.
Yeah, I think, well, I have had a couple of summers with holidays now.
After being in academia.
Yeah, but I sort of finished. So what I did the summer after quitting, we went on a 5 week road trip in the States.
Right.
But that was perhaps my first real holiday as a grown up. It was a summer holiday, having multiple weeks off not working.
Right. I'm just thinking about the kind of cultural difference of the fact that I think more people in the UK kind of break up their holiday time into shorter chunks, whereas it seems really common that people in Norway take the bulk of their holiday in the summer.
Yeah, it has been. But I think more and more people are saving up to go later, to sort of going to the Mediterranean or something during winter and so on.
Or to get some sunshine.
Yeah.
Or to go skiing, maybe? Not in the Mediterranean, that'd be weird.
Yeah, perhaps.
What are some things that a Norwegian would do on a holiday or in their summer holidays that a British person wouldn't? So, like, paint the house. Let's come back to this.
Yeah, let's roll back to that. Doing it yourself. Home improvement.
Yeah, that seems like a thing people do on, like, long weekends in the UK, maybe not so much over the summer. There certainly isn't, like, because wooden houses are not so much of a thing in the UK, there certainly isn't this kind of compulsion to, like, repaint the house and make it look, you know, just so.
Yeah, I guess if you have a wooden house, you have to paint it every couple of years. But it extends to more than that.
What else is there?
Everything from, oh, let's make a new kitchen, to let's make a shed, or, yeah, whatever.
You just got to build something, or paint something, or
yeah.
DIY the shit out of something. People do that in the UK, but because they don't have so long off, maybe it's less of a thing. I once built some internal shelving over the summer holidays. It was unbearably hot. We lived in this really warm south-facing flat, and it was a very warm period of weather, and I spent all of it up the stepladder. It was horrible. Also, the house wasn't in any way rectilinear, and so I cut rectilinear shelving and tried to fit that, and it didn't work at all, so I ended up having to customise everything to fit into this very non-linear, very kind of non-rectilinear house. It was hilarious.
Well, I live in a 100-year-old house, and nothing is like
have square.
Yeah, or 90-degree angles. Forget about it.
Right, right.
It also moves during the seasons, so.
Wow.
So you have to sort of have sort of a buffer between your tilings and, no, not the tilings, but the moldings.
Mm.
So when we refurbished the whole house after buying it, I had to learn a lot of English carpentry terms.
Right. Why English, though? Were you watching YouTube to figure out how to do stuff?
Yeah.
Cool.
Because when we have not just moldings, but moldings that have angles.
Right.
And so on. You have to do, yeah. It's like, if they were a sort of something like heptapod, but for carpentry.
So it's just the sound of splintering wood. You've got to interpret it and go, oh yeah, actually, at the dialect, wow, yeah, this wood is very,
yeah.
Wow.
But the thing about DIY and home improvement, it is also an element of doing something where we can see the immediate result of it, and the feeling of mastery when you master something, if you do it.
Is this a thing here? So somebody told me about Sweden, that Swedes go through phases of needing to be good at things. Like there was a phase where Swedes needed to know how to bake sourdough, and there was a phase where Swedes needed to know like a lot about coffee, like proper coffee nerding. Is this a bit like that, where there's like sort of phases that the country goes through where everyone has to know about, I don't know, like how to angle grind or whatever? I still don't know what that is.
No, I think it goes deeper, actually. I think
what's deeper than angle grinding? It depends how you do it, I guess, but sure.
Because I think there is an element of you should know how to do some basic house, not just housekeeping, but I struggle to find a word.
Maintenance?
Yeah. So it goes for the car, but also for the house.
Okay, it's like an independence thing or a kind of self-sufficiency thing.
Yeah, and it's also perhaps has something to do with the male role model thing, which we, of course, do not approve of, but it's still there. As a man in Norway, you should know how to change oil or, I don't know,
refurbish a house.
Yeah. Not perhaps refurbish the house, but doing basic stuff as how to nail a thing to a certain wall, or to screw it up, or well,
you know what? Screwing it up means something else.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure that kind of thing goes on in the UK, right? Like, there's a lot of, I think, male posturing in the UK about I don't know, everything. Like if you bought a new lawnmower or something like that, then there'd be like a conversation about what kind of functionality it had. And again, this is stereotypically male. It's, you know, it doesn't mean that it's only men who do it. It's just, yeah, we do not approve, I think, is a good way of phrasing it. Everybody should be allowed to nerd out about lawnmowers or whatever.
Yeah, but I think it is a good expectation or a good thing to pass on to the next generation, how to fix stuff yourself and how to be a bit independent and understand the materials and functionality of the stuff we surround ourselves with all the time.
Right. It's kind of, it's a bit depressing how it's become much easier to buy a new thing than to get an old thing repaired. And usually cheaper as well.
Mm.
Is that the same here? It's certainly true in the UK.
I think it's the same everywhere, probably, or mostwhere.
Pop fact, my grandfather, actually my step-grandfather, because my real grandfather died quite young, but my step-grandfather invented a thing called Milliput, which is a putty. And it's these sort of two ceramic things that you, they're like LLIPUT at the end. And it, I assume that's what you're Googling. And you mix them together and it catalyzes and it forms this thing. It forms this kind of ceramic kind of thing that's quite resistant. And it was invented originally for fixing things like cups and plates and stuff like that that got chips in them. And now actually they mostly sell to people who make fake coral for aquariums. But it's like a cool thing, but like no one does that anymore. No one buys these little repair things and they fix his cracks in their cups. They just throw the cup away and get a new cup. It's a bit sad.
It's a weird heuristic availability klaxon going off here, because I just recently heard a lot about the Japanese art of mending broken ceramics with gold.
Have you been watching The Man in the High Castle?
No.
That comes up.
But someone has kintsugi, it's called. Kintsugi. Hmm. And someone has transferred this concept over to psychology.
Say more, I'm fascinated.
And I read this piece recently. I think it was in Norwegian, actually. And so, yeah, there's this guy and... No. I think it's Richard Kerr. Again, I don't know nothing about this person, so I don't know if I approve yet, but... So the concept is that you are a broken person and we can sort of do work sort of with you, and you can, your brokenness can be sort of beautiful or useful in some way. Something like that.
Is this, depending on how this works, like it could be really trite or actually useful?
So let's find a quote. That's good. That's good for podcasts.
Quotes are good. Yeah.
Resilience is the ability to recover, incorporating new growth that has occurred as a result of the suffering. Like a shattered bowl repaired using the ancient art of kintsugi, so human beings recover, revealing the scars of conflict and trauma.
That could go either way for me. Like a shit sandwich still tastes of shit.
But I guess it relies on sort of a surrounding of acceptance or understanding of the kind of trauma.
The first step is admitting the cup is broken.
So another... Yeah, so this Richard Kerr... Kerr? He also writes that, for example... Your eating disorder is the crack through which you become a more amazing person. The most amazing people we have known are those who have known defeat, known suffering, known struggle, known loss, and have found their way out of the depths. These persons have an appreciation, a sensitivity, and an understanding of life that fills them with compassion, gentleness, and a deep loving concern. Amazing people do not just happen. Put in the academic well. And not just a well, but with the, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I can't really dislike or disagree with any of that on principle. I think the execution of it is everything though, right?
So this concept relies on that you fix or mend the broken things with gold. But how would it work with Minipet or whatever?
Milliput. You mix the two bits together, it catalyzes and becomes slightly warm. You form it before it dries, then it hardens. Ta-da! It's not gold. Although they do now make lots of colors, which again speaks to the coral industry of the fish tank world. That's a whole thing I don't understand, but you know. People have fish, so sure. How do we get here? Where are we?
I don't remember. We talked about holidays and your step-grandfather.
Right.
The inventor. Right. So, yeah.
Yeah. Holidays. Yeah, I'm... I'm in a really weird place this week, which is that I have all these ideas and stuff I want to do for work and like lots of energy to do stuff for work at the same time. If I do not take 3 weeks off, I'm just going to blow a fuse.
And that's the crux, right? We have actually to take time off.
Right. I mean, it should be like mandatory anyway to take time off. And it is certainly in the UK. You have to take all your annual leave. It's unusual for me to be told you have to take 3 weeks off at this time. Like, usually it's been up to me to take it. Actually, as an academic, it was really difficult to find time outside the summer because I was teaching a lot and there wasn't really the opportunity. So it's probably good that someone is telling me to take 3 weeks because I need 3 weeks off. But at the same time, I'm like, but there's all this stuff!
Yeah, because it takes a while for your sort of mind and brain to wind down and sort of derail from the worky mindset, right?
Right, that's the first week right there, right? I mean,
yeah, and it's probably good to travel, to sort of get out of the usual scenery, and but my air quotes problem is that when I'm relaxed, when I sleep more and so on, and don't have specific projects and expectations and so on, I start to get creative.
Yeah, you want to clamp down on that.
Yeah, and my creativity is expressed mostly through coding and making stuff and
your day job, in other words.
Yeah, reading stuff and writing stuff. So it's really hard to not do that when you have this urge to do it.
Yeah, it's a weird paradox that, right? I think I need to commit myself to reading one fiction book. I'm very, very bad at reading fiction because there's so much interesting non-fiction stuff. And I got out of the habit of reading fiction as a PhD student because, you know, always guilty about not reading papers.
Yeah, my wife actually turned me back on to the fiction stuff.
Like what?
Many things, but the reason is that, and it's a bit embarrassing having been in the humanities for so many years and not sort of realizing this, but the fiction stuff, that is the good fiction stuff, it is not science, but it is research and studies of humanity, of social relationships, of feelings, of state of minds, and so on. And it's hard to sort of create that in a non-fiction genre, right? So you have to create these narratives to spur these kind of feelings and reflections on. And that's why you shouldn't feel sort of guilty of reading fiction.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. I mean, like, reading a really good fiction book is like being on holiday or like going to a new place, right? It does the same thing. It makes you look at your own life differently.
And it also increases your emotional and social competence, I think, and your capability for empathy. Because you're brought into mindsets which you usually don't have access to.
But it's nicely risk-free.
Somewhat.
Well, it depends on the book.
I'm very impressionable, so I get really... If I read the downer stuff, I get really depressed about it. So, yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to read some Ian McEwan this holiday, but I'm just like, I'm not sure I'm feeling robust enough for that.
But now I'm reading a book.
A book. This is the word of the week. Book.
Yeah. About, set in the late 60s in sort of a Norwegian urban setting. And it's from this child's point of view. And it's weird how it managed to take you in both to back to your sort of the childhood in the sense of expectations and the how you saw the world, but also to the time. It creates a really living image of the surroundings and so on. So, yeah, I really like that. I appreciate that more now.
What's the book?
The book is it's called Vidunderbarna. Vidunderbarna. Do you know the word? Vidunder. Vidunder.
No. What is it?
It's like talented children or something in English. I guess there's a more proper wonderful kids. Yeah. Prodigies, perhaps.
Okay.
Yeah. It's written by Roy Jacobsen. That's the book. If you read Norwegian, go read it. It's great. Roy Jacobsen is actually a great author.
Cool.
But, yeah. So, are you going to read something this summer?
I am. I got some recommendations from a colleague, actually. Just trying to remember what they were.
I usually give you flack for editing this podcast too much, but this time I think
this time,
to do some editing.
I think maybe
We haven't really asked our listeners if they appreciate long pauses or not.
Yeah, I don't know. We should put a poll on the website or something. Erlend Loe. And Naive Super and Doppler.
And two great ones. So almost every kid in secondary school wrote a book or an assignment or on Erlend Loe in, I guess, the early 2000s or something.
Mm-hmm.
It was quite popular, that book.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm told they're very good fun.
They are. Or... yeah, but sort of in the. It's good books if you like ironic distance.
Well, it should be right up your street.
So yeah, but it is very much in the zeitgeist of that generation. The ironic generation.
It was recommended to me by someone rather younger. So yeah.
So.
I'm just ironic and distanced because of my age rather than because of my generation.
Should we also inform our listeners on a meta level that we are not, this is not 7 a.m. In the morning. We are now at, say, 7 p.m. in the night.
Right.
Hence the different energy. But yeah. That was not apologetic, by the way.
It sounded different. A little bit apologetic. Yeah. I can't tell if this is like a different pace from usual, to be honest. I've done a work day, you're on holiday, I don't know where we are.
I think that's the gist of this podcast. We don't know.
Fair. We don't know. We have no idea.
And and also we have sort of a topic, but we also have follow-up in the topic and the other way around, so there's no structure. This is a true holiday... episode. Structureless. Chaotic. Entropy.
Just keep listing words.
Yeah. Chaos. Mess.
Yeah. You want to do follow-up?
Yeah, I guess so.
Scum finished.
It has, and no spoilers, because I haven't finished it.
You're kidding me. How far off are you?
I don't remember exactly, but at the point, there were many updates.
There were.
It was sort of this ketchup bottle of scum.
Right, and you came unstuck.
Yeah. And now I'm procrastinating the rest of it.
How come?
I just feel like it's sort of... it feels like work to catch up.
Wow. Well, maybe you shouldn't.
And also, to me, Scum hasn't finished. There's still more.
I guess. Well, I guess you can stay in that state permanently, right?
Yeah.
Hmm.
So we can't talk about it. We can talk about the end.
That's fine, that's fine. Tell me when you finish. We'll talk about it then.
And I'm not really that precious about spoilers and so on, but I actually don't want to know how you felt about the end of Scum.
That's all right. I'm not going to tell you.
That being said, I completed the television series The Leftovers.
I saw. I really want to see it. I read the description somewhere and thought, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, it is. And my guess, hot tip, is to not watch it for the mystery, but watch it for what they're trying to say about the human condition.
You said it was very good about grief.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, I think, why I would want to watch it. Like, the thing that I watch TV for primarily is to watch characters be real. I don't really care so much about the story. It's about what happens to people and how they develop or unravel or both.
Yeah, and I guess The Leftovers, the realness of the characters can be discussed, but if you sort of watch it on its own premises, you will have a better experience, I guess.
Right. Well, I have no expectations, really.
Yeah.
So, cool.
And also what I appreciate with, for example, Leftovers, it's done, it's finished. They closed it off.
Right.
And no, you don't get the answer to everything, but that's okay.
Yeah.
And the same thing with another great TV series, The Good Wife. That also finished. And that was okay. You didn't get all the answers, but it was a good ride. I like TV shows that finishes.
Yeah, some of them should finish sooner.
Yeah.
Honestly, if Breaking Bad finished after season one, it stands incredibly well, season one, on its own.
It did for me.
Mm. Oh, well, there you go. Perfect. You don't have to go any further. You're sorted. Cool. We've diverged somewhat. Or digressed, anyway. We talked about Ir Eno before, right? And the weather.
The forecast website.
The forecast website and app and everything, yes, where Norwegians get their weather from. And apparently Danes are going nuts for this. Apparently they love it. Who knew? There was an article in the paper. Run it through Google Translate. It will read terribly, but you'll get the gist.
Due to its beautiful graphics.
Right.
But they also, there are opinions that it's not that precise in Denmark. Which is a bit weird, because I thought they used the same kind of data set, but okay.
I'm not sure it's that precise in Norway at the moment either. Like, it's kind of thrown it down with rain the couple of nights this week where there was no possible, there was no indication that was going to happen. So I think it's just summer weather. I think they just don't know what's happening.
Perhaps it's the weather that's imprecise and it's weird.
Right. That's what's happening. Yeah. There's this thing about umbrella bias, though, right? Like, the weather forecast would rather tell you to take an umbrella if there is a risk of that, because you're better to have an umbrella and not need it than to not have one and need it.
Yeah, but it has this I wanted to say perspiration.
Eh?
Perspiration thing going on. Where you can see...
Precipitation.
Precipitation. Where you can see the chance for rain over a time scale.
Well, sure, but like that turns out to be wrong quite a lot, which is fine. It's not precise.
So one of the interviews I did at the Udonat podcast was with this meteorologist who studied how people interpreted forecasts on Ir.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool, it's actually a really cool episode that. It was really interesting.
And he did use research without knowing that he did use research, being from the natural sciences.
That was kind of funny.
And what he said, what he pointed out, which is interesting, is that it's really hard to disseminate uncertainty, which Yr tries to do with the sort of these squarings and so on. But that's really hard.
Yeah, like thinking about uncertainty, we talked about this before when we talked about stats, right? Like just communicating about probability is hard. Communicating uncertainty, it's just... like, yeah, you can't win.
For example, the darkness of the clouds, how do you interpret that?
Right. Well, like, some of it's like cloud thickness, but then past a certain point you start thinking, is that going to rain?
Yeah,
but that's me reading into it.
I think it's actually, it is about possibility and not the cloud thickness. Or something. Perhaps I remember it incorrectly, but there were this kind of thing with the icons that surprised me.
I need to listen to that again.
That's skeuomorphic, right? I think due to weather and scum, Scandinavia has sort of found back to its former roots, perhaps? Not roots, but...
Where are you going with this?
You're closer. I'm dreaming of the pan-Scandinavian nation.
How's that coming? Have you persuaded everyone to use the same currency yet? Or, like, speak the same language?
As for the currency, we at least have something to offer on that front.
What, it's not the euro or the pound or the dollar? It's not tanking.
The new designed banknote, right?
Good. That was a nice segue and I just blew it.
We have some...
They're beautiful.
Got some new notes. Yeah.
They're so beautiful. Have you seen any? Are they actually out?
Yeah, I've seen... I have handled even a 200 kroner bill.
I have to... pick you up on this though, like, what were you doing handling cash?
Because we got it from my wife's grandmother.
That's sweet. So it came from an old person.
Yeah.
Right. Like, no one in this country handles cash, basically, ever. Or almost nobody anyway. So it's really ironic that these beautiful banknotes have been made and almost no one will ever see them or use them.
Yeah, probably. Well, but they are even accessible for blind people.
Do they have texture?
Yeah, they have some this on the edge. They have some stripe thing or something you can feel.
How well could you feel it? Like, as a non-blind person, obviously, I guess you've got less sensitive fingers, but.
I forgot to do it actually, but. I guess they have tested it, I hope.
Okay. You'd hope so, right? I need to get hold of one of these.
And I guess to airfare tickets and banknotes are the most common sort of study case for designers to do.
Really?
Yeah, there are like many medium pieces on. We redesigned the airfare ticket, or we redesigned the dollar.
Right. There's a good thing, if I can find it, about redesign of rail, the whole rail experience. So not just the tickets, but I think it was IDEO or someone like that who did it in London. It was pretty nice, actually. I'll find a link. But yeah, it wasn't just the tickets. It was like the whole thing. It was much better, but that's because the whole thing sucks at the moment, so it wasn't hard to improve on. Not to, like, diminish their input or anything, but... It says here the troll dick will rise again.
Yep, I have followed this thing since last week. And as we mentioned, someone cut off the troll dick. They castrated the troll. It is now a troll with a high-pitched voice. But we will actually glue the manhood back on the troll. So tourists and adventurers can climb up on it again and take their pictures.
Are they going to be able to fix it so well that you can actually climb on it again? I will be impressed if that's true.
That's the whole point.
I'm going to be really impressed then. I'm literally watching the live feed of some people in high vis and helmets, talking to each other and I guess trying to figure out which bit they're going to glue next. It's fascinating. We will link to the live stream.
Yeah, so Norway has this thing with live streaming, tedious stuff, minute for minute. The gluing on the troll dick is one of them. And also on the Norwegian broadcast channel, we have something called the Summer Train, where they are filming the train again, minute for minute, and have some content and show around it, also. But yeah.
It's going to be too late. I've just seen this. It's going to be too late by the time we actually get this podcast out, I think, because the it says they hope to have it up, as it were. Friday lunchtime?
By tomorrow. Yeah, by tomorrow. I guess you can watch the rewind.
But, I guess. I won't be the same.
On the page we are going to link to it in the show notes, there's also this cool slider thing where you can see the troll dick before and after the ruination of it.
Yeah, that's pretty brutal.
I guess they have to add a third thing.
What, the during?
Well, after they have fixed it.
Yeah. After reconstructive surgery.
And this is a testament to the dugnadsånd of Norway. We gathered 225 kroner in a week.
To thousand just... or just 225?
Yeah, thousand.
Okay.
It was implied. Yeah, we could help children in poor places, but we chose to gather our resources to get the dick up again.
Welcome to Norway.
Welcome to Norway, indeed. It's a very potent country.
I guess. I've run out of puns for this. I can't. Did you have a word of the week?
I don't think I actually did, or have.
Shameful.
I could just take one out from thin air.
Please.
Malingsspann.
Malings what?
Malingsspann.
Something about painting.
Yeah, it's a compound word. The first one is maling, or painting, as you said.
Spun? Second,
it's spun. Not span, but spun.
I don't know what that is.
It's a bucket.
Oh, I did know that. And is it the bucket you dip your paintbrush in?
Well, you could dip your paintbrush into the malingsspann, but you wouldn't do that, because if you are going for some serious painting, you of course have this painting board that you have your paint in that, and you have this rolling thing, and then you can
like a roller and a tray thing.
A painting tray.
Yeah. So is it okay to roller your house when you're painting the house? It's not like a thing that you must do with a brush. There's not like a snobbery about that or anything.
If you want good results, you should roll it. If you do it with a brush, you will have these brush marks.
Is that not cool, though? Is that not, like, traditional?
I forgot that you are a foreigner.
Yeah, I have no idea. We don't have wooden houses very much.
But it's, you wouldn't use a painting brush on sort of plaster or bricks either.
Well, preferably not. Yeah, I'd like decorated the entire of our house when we moved into our old house. And yeah, no, I used a roller except around those small bits because it was quicker.
Yeah, and you want to use a roller for most of the stuff, because then you will have a smooth surface. An evenly smooth surface. And for the sort of the cricks and the cracks, you have to use a brush.
Right. Okay. I consider myself educated. So what's the bucket for?
It's just something I'm dealing with this week. Buckets of paint.
Okay. Is it the tin that it comes in? Is it what you buy it in? Or is it the thing that you put the paint into first?
It is both the tin and what you buy.
Yes.
Yeah?
Okay. They're not separate things. Same thing.
Same thing.
Okay. Just checking. What is happening in your house?
We have a basement. It's sort of the final thing. Having gone through all the rooms and the thing that I have, procrastinated to do. Because I had to wash and clean up the whole thing before I could even begin to think of painting it.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Hmm. Something lett att vara mal där I källarlägenheten din or something. Yeah.
Yeah, except that it isn't.
Sucks to be you. No, the reason I asked you what is happening is because I keep hearing this sound like someone unrolling like a big coil of wire or something. No? In that case, I have very strange interference. Unless I still have the tab open with the troll dick.
Most probably.
Yeah, maybe that's what's happening. Yeah, there's some stuff happening. I don't think that's what I heard, though. All right, I'm putting that on pause. That's enough troll dick for today.
That's what she said.
Ding! Thank you.
On so many levels. But, okay. But, yeah. But, well, it's not that hard to do. It's just, it can be a bit tedious, but it is good to do some concrete work.
That's what he said.
Touche. But or touche, as they say in France. But yeah.
So you had a word of the week, right? I have a word. This made me laugh a lot. I was on a boat, like a big commuter ferry boat, and there was a thing by the sliding door that said klemfara, which is danger of being pinned by the sliding door, but it also kind of means danger of hugs, right?
yeah, I guess so.
And I was incredibly tickled by this. And in fact, if you Google klemfara, then you have all these lovely posters that say, so like, keep your distance, danger of hugs. And of course, they don't really mean that at all, but it makes me laugh. So it's a word that I thought was very amusing. And all it is that it's a commonality between the word for hug and the word for kind of pinching or gripping or getting caught in a thing. But I found it hilarious. And I feel like I should get a T-shirt with this on it now that says, klemfara, håll avstånd, which is like danger of hugging, keep your distance.
But are you a hugger?
I'm British, not really. Like, you know, I hug people. I hug friends.
Is there an expectation?
Yeah, like if it's kind of mutually understood. But I'm like, if, you know, it's a person I've never hugged before and the context is a bit uncertain, I'm probably not the first person who's going to do that. Are you?
Not really.
Hmm. Well, shit, that just killed that piece of conversation, stone dead. Yep.
Yes, and?
Yeah.
But, yeah. Yeah, that's a good word.
Yeah. Well, it makes me laugh. It seems appropriate for both the British and I think maybe the Norwegians as well.
Yeah, now I just remembered that I had homework and of course I failed.
That's okay. I forgot what it was.
But,
what was your homework?
It was to pick out use of English in Norwegian.
Oh, yeah.
Sort of, yeah, English appropriation, I guess. Or is it Norwegian appropriation of English?
I think the latter.
Yeah. So I had a good start, but...
I can't remember what you said, actually. You came to me with a good one. But it was completely out of context, so I had no idea what you're talking about. Which describes actually like 90% of our interactions, so... Yeah.
We'll leave it a mystery.
Okay. I can't find it in Slack. Cultural pick. You had yours.
I had one, but to be more specific, I think the last... it's so weird that we say last when we mean the most recent.
Mm.
It isn't the last episode of Desert Island Disc. There will be more episodes. It is the last to be... No, it isn't the last to be published either. It's the most recent episode of Desert Island Discs as of now we are recording.
But, like, Norwegian makes this ambiguity as well, right? You can say sist...
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is the interview with Professor Carlo Rovelli. It's perhaps known for some of you, but he is a theoretical physicist. He's one behind the theory of loop quantum gravity. He's the stuff.
Sure.
Yeah. And he's Italian and a pretty interesting character.
Yeah, I listened to a little bit of it last night and yeah, he seems pretty cool.
And in the introduction that Kirsty does, she mentions that he has written about science. And again, me, I have a terrible memory. But it was much in the same vein as I expressed, look at me, that the science is about dealing with uncertainty and the stuff we don't know and not so much about truth.
Yeah, that guy was just totally ripping you off when he was talking about that on Desert Island Discs.
Yeah. Great minds think alike. I think I after going into the stats of our program, I guess I have grown a bit of an ego.
Oh, you're going to bring this up. Okay, fine. Yes, the episode where you talk about leaving academia gets like twice as many hits as all of the other episodes. You're very famous. Well done.
But what worries me that we should see a tail. your episode was quite unpopular.
Yeah, I get that. I don't think it's that interesting. I think I've talked myself to death on that topic. Truthfully, I thought yours was way more interesting.
Well, as scientists, we should pin it down to multiple factors. And I guess publishing in one of the weeks, the most hectic weeks before the holidays, perhaps has something to do with it also. And yeah, we should really work on our social media strategy. Because now is the time. Now people have time for listening of hours and hours with us bickering and discussing.
We're not bickering.
No, we are, aren't we?
I don't know. I thought you were. This is now meta bickering.
We should perhaps bicker more. Perhaps it would be more
no, we
interesting.
Shouldn't. Sorry, I'm just being a dick now.
Is this the room for an argument?
That's next door.
Yeah, now I lost my thread, but...
Sorry. It's something about how you're a rock star and like people only tune in for you and can you get your own room and it needs to have fresh flowers and only brown M&Ms.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we'll sort that out for the next show. What?
Well, I'm the lead. I'm not going to do the work. You have to bring in the talking points.
Oh, boy, are we screwed.
All right. Well, but do you also have a pick of the week?
I do. It's just a bit random.
Is it cultural?
Yeah, well, it is, actually. It's like a small difference is kind of cultural. So I was reading the paper yesterday or this morning or something, and I was reading this piece about a neighbourhood in Oslo where fewer than 50% of the people there actually are in work. And I thought we talk a lot all the time about all the stuff in Norway that's more affluent and how Norway is just generally better and that the sort of social safety net is generally better and so on. But, you know, then you read stuff in the newspaper like this and you're like, well, it's not a solved problem. So there's a particular area of Oslo, as I say, where lots of people do not have work. Coincidentally, it's got quite a high proportion of, well, not coincidentally, but related to this in some ways, that there's quite a high proportion of immigrants who I guess potentially would find it harder to get jobs depending on their level of education and or level of Norwegian or English. But it goes into some detail. We'll run it through Google Translate. It shows you also, one of the things that's really interesting about this is these it's sort of extraordinary kind of, I don't know whether they're from the 1980s or maybe the 1960s, these kind of big buildings, which I think probably people thought they were building like the Oslo of the future. And on a nice day when they're all surrounded with trees, they actually look quite fun. But like, it's honestly kind of dystopian when there's no green or no sunshine. These big blocks of flats that are kind of weird shapes.
Yeah, I guess that could be my word of the week. It's called Drabantby.
Mm, indeed. It's a suburb. It sounds much more cool in Norwegian. It sounds like a Trabant car, like the old East German. Are they East German or Czech? Trabant.
I think it's Czech.
Okay. Maybe I'm confusing them with the other thing, maybe.
Don't quote me on that, but...
Yeah. Anyway, old kind of... Anyway, it sounds like that to me, but yeah. But it just means like a satellite town or like henchman town, right? Because a Trabant is a henchman, right?
Sure.
Sorry, Brabant, not Trabant. Sorry. I'm mixing my...
Yeah. I think the city planning was more cynical than it would look cool. It was for workers and to sort of keep them out of the city center where the rich people lived, I guess.
Ouch.
So this was, yeah, during the industrial age, they built this.
Aren't we still in the industrial age?
Now we are in the post-industrial age. In the post-post, I guess.
Hmm.
So we have had sort of this service something age. And now we have the age of the robots.
Sure, just like that. Okay.
Or information age, perhaps.
Is somebody going to build a cool kind of satellite town for all the robots to live in?
They should.
That'd be kind of cool.
Like Futurama. Futurama is actually kind of a summer holiday TV series for me.
Yeah, how come?
Because they aired it on TV2 during summers when I was younger.
Hmm.
Late at night, so I stayed up late and saw those. And this was before you could get stuff really on the internet, especially TV stuff.
It's kind of cool. Unlike the situation in the suburb, which is a little grim, and we should do something about that.
Yeah, Norway has their problems too.
Oh, yeah.
But we have the best kinds of problems.
Yeah, could do better on this front.
Yeah.
All right. We'll put a link in the show notes. It's kind of interesting sociologically, and it's, I think, definitely worth bearing in mind that Norway is not all rich people, not all oil money.
Yeah, do not come here.
I'll get my coat.
I hope people catch my irony.
I think they do. I think they get you.
Though this kind of sentiment is quite popular on the internet these times, so it could go either way.
Yeah, true. We might end up with a whole bunch of right-wing listeners. Hi, right-wing listeners. By all means, listen, but yeah. whatever.
Well, it is a bit of an untapped market. Does someone cater to the right-wing listener?
I think there might be one or two broadcasters.
Do they have sort of this intellectual podcast?
They got podcasts.
I'm treading this weird classist territory now. I don't even know.
Yeah. I'm just letting you hang yourself out to dry here. I'm not touching that. Not today.
Right. This feels like the end of this episode.
I think it might be.
It's 1.5 hours already.
Man, it's okay. We'll edit we'll edit it down a little bit.
Yeah, we will edit this.
Okay, I will edit it because you'll be up a mountain. Uh-huh. We should say that the episodes are online and go and have a look at the website because we all put links to all the stuff that we just talked about. And we keep forgetting to mention the website. But actually, someone asked me whether we had any kind of suggestions or form or anything like that that they could send things to that they wanted to hear us talk about.
If you have suggestions, you can find a mailbox deep in the Norwegian forests. And if you go there and write your suggestion on a thin, 2 gram paper,
or a piece of birch bark.
That's even better. And put fire to that mark while you think the suggestion, and then go into the water and just stay there with the Freya. That's how you do it.
Wow. Or you could just go to smalldifferences.fireside.fm and use our contact form. But the thing Knut said was cool too. Sure, you can do that.
And we read them all, the whole bunch.
We do. Yeah, seriously, send us stuff, send us ideas. We didn't talk about supermarkets, and we should do that soon. Because that was actually requested by Rachel, and I thought it was a good topic. Maybe we could talk about that sometime.
All right. And, should we mention your little Twitter project?
Yeah, it's got nothing to do with this, really, though.
Well, you say that, but...
Sure.
You have a trickle-down title economy here.
So, if you are listening to this, you've probably noticed that we enjoy naming the episodes. We also enjoy naming the chapters, which you can find in your podcast app, which we break the episodes down into. But one of the things that I set up just for fun was a Twitter account called Episode Title, so episode_title. And there we tweet episode titles that crop up during real conversations. There is nothing there that has not been said as part of some conversation at some point. And I almost wish these were our actual episode titles. I think my favourite is There Is No Quiche Emoji.
I was pretty amazed that that handle was available.
Yeah, I guess there's not much meta-podcasting going on Twitter. There should be.
It's a good find. And also, I'm really, really tempted to make the corresponding podcast.
Oh, for each of these?
Yeah.
Well, you should.
Me alone? Alone? Just...
Oh, well, we both could, but, I don't know. Would they live up to the titles? I mean, arm trousers, I ask you. That was my husband, by the way, trying to remember what sleeves were called. He was a bit tired.
Yeah, to differ it from Small Differences, we could just switch sides, I guess.
I guess, sure.
Right, and with that, I guess the final thing is just to say... Ha en god sommer. Takk for at du hørte på.
Ha en god sommer.